Hello, hola, hola, Spanish lovers. Welcome to Spanish We Do, a show about everything and anything that can be done in Spanish, except learning Spanish. What I mean is that this is not a podcast to learn Spanish. This is a podcast to talk about Spanish, the language, the culture, the people. But you will learn one thing today, or well, throughout the next couple of episodes, and it is, what's Taco Bell Spanish and how useful is it? But also something emotionally beautiful, in particular a sentence or a phrase used in Costa Rica, which is pura vida. Translated, literally, pure life. But the meaning of it, I think it's going to take three episodes talking to my guest. And, well, this is season two. We've had 13 episodes in season one. We cover all kinds of things. But there is one thing that is the same in all of them. I spoke to native Spanish speakers. But this is season two. And there is something different happening in this first episode of season two. I'm going to be speaking to Michael Jenkins. He's my guest. He's from the US originally. And in the mid-90s, went with his wife to Costa Rica in Central America for 2 weeks, just for a vacation. And he stayed for 16 years. So he's going to be the first non-native speaker of Spanish in the show, but with a very, very useful point of view, as you are probably guessing already. But there's something else very particular about Mr. Michael Jenkins, El Señor Michael Jenkins, and it is that he's a client of ours at Spanish We Do. So we'll talk about that as well. So there are going to be three main themes just floating over our conversation. Number one, Spanish. His point of view before learning Spanish, during learning Spanish, and after, because they're back in the US, they've been back for over 10 years. And also, he's going to speak about Costa Rica. And one of the things you are going to feel, because I did feel it, and I told him throughout the conversation, is that this guy is in love with Costa Rica. He was there for enough time to have, a comprehensive relationship. So it's a relationship that it's not always perfect, like every real relationship. So we'll talk about that. And the third theme that we'll talk about in the third episode, because I'm going to divide this in three parts, is going to be about working with Spanish currently. His current position, what we do, how we do it, mistakes, advice, takeaways, that kind of thing. So let's get to it. So, hello, Michael. Welcome to Spanish We Do, and thanks so much for accepting the invitation.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I think you're brave, actually, because you're going to be the first interviewee who is not a native Spanish speaker, and but you're a midway. So we'll talk about that. And I think it's going to be very, very interesting. But just as an introduction, where are you currently located?
Currently, my family and I live in Southeast Iowa, which is in, you know, the Midwest of the United States.
Yeah. And are you originally from there?
No. It's a bit of a long story. I was born in Texas, but my dad was in the military. So we moved around a lot, different places. And I've lived in many places, you know, as an adult. We came here because of a school for our daughter that what brought us here.
Oh, great. Okay, yeah. So we're going to approach this like in a three-prong approach. So the first thing I think I would like to talk about the language, Spanish itself. And you're, as sure. I said, you're going to be like the first guest in this podcast who's going to talk from a sort of outside view. And I say sort of because, as I mentioned in the introduction, I will record afterwards. And you've lived for 16 years in Costa Rica, or you had in the past. So yes. Could you maybe tell us how that came to be?
Oh, sure. Let's see. This is back in the early to mid-90s. My wife and I were living in Washington, D.C. I was a photojournalist for a magazine there and had been there for about 5 years or so in that position. And at a certain point, I just felt like, wow, you know, is there more? Is there another way of doing this? Living, you know, taking life, which, you know, how you do it, rather than just getting up, doing the job, looking forward to the weekends, all this kind of stuff. I was looking for maybe some other way of living, way of being, just to try something different. just a life experience, I suppose. And so we actually ended up going for a 2-week vacation to Costa Rica and tried to do the, you know, touristic thing of seeing the entire country in 2 weeks, which was crazy. And I wouldn't do that again. But we ended up, like, basically our next to last stop on that tour of Costa Rica, kind of running across an opportunity. We ran across a restaurant that had recently closed. And my wife loved to cook. And so when we were in there and then we went up there trying to find a meal and we saw that it was closed, but we peered in the window, saw it was closed. And I looked at my wife and she kind of knew in that moment that something was up because I had this idea in my head.
Oh my God, that sounds like a weekend movie you're narrating. Go on, go on.
Then surreptitiously, after that, I should say, we went up to this little, I don't know, store at the Reserva Monteverde, which is the big cloud forest park there. And ran into this woman who used to run that restaurant that just closed, and she put us in contact with the owner. And when we went back to the States, we just made a decision, hey, we're going to make this change. And we quit our jobs, sold our stuff, and us and I think two cats at the time moved to Costa Rica to open a vegetarian restaurant in the cloud forest without either of us really speaking any Spanish, which in retrospect sounds rather scary and silly, but it's what we did.
We're going to talk about that for sure. That yeah. Sounds great. How long was it from the time you spent those couple of weeks in Costa Rica till the time you actually arrived to stay?
Oh, gosh, maybe 2 months.
Wow, that was quick.
Fairly quick, yeah. We had to get back and, you know, kind of close one part of a life and open up another chapter.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk about that as long as you want to. We'll okay. Get into that. Now, just to complete like the general picture, you're currently an accounts manager at the McCallman Group. Could you tell us just briefly what the group does and what you do there?
Sure. The McCallman Group is a risk management company. Principally, we work with big companies and we offer everything from training modules, like training videos, to articles and podcasts and other things like that, that help companies learn how to avoid employment practices risks. So how to avoid things, issues with discrimination or racism or bad hiring practices or other things as well, such as cyber risks and stuff, like how to avoid, you know, inadvertently giving your password to somebody because they're phishing attacks, things like this. And I also do stuff with child safety issues, a lot of it through the Catholic, you know, in coordination with the Catholic Church and so forth. So it's mostly risk management. We work a lot with large insurance companies because they purchase our services to give to their clients, their insured, so that those people through our services can learn what to do and not to do to avoid risk and hopefully not get, you know, eventually sued or something if it comes to that.
And you as an accounts manager, you are in direct relationship with clients?
Yes, kind of two main parts of my job. One is keeping, you know, in touch with our clients, making sure everything's good with them, developing new products and sites for them, for our newer clients, websites. We develop websites and then put our material on them for them. And then I also oversee the production of those video training modules I mentioned, which is how I got to meet you, Jose.
That's right.
We do some of our training, most of it's, you know, done in English, but some of them we translate into Spanish. And then have narrators such as yourself do the Spanish voiceover. And we have, you know, also somebody to translate the text part.
Yeah.
And so we put together Spanish versions of the modules as well for certain ones that we do.
Yeah. And that's how we've been in contact for the last maybe, what, four maybe? Yeah. Is it 4 years?
Couple years, so? Yeah. Something like that. Yep.
So, yep. But it's the first time we're seeing each other face to face.
That's true.
So that's interesting. Well, part is part of the reality, which got enhanced, I guess, with the pandemic. But it's part of the reality of the current international work environment, because one of the things that gets lost is the casual encounter just by the coffee maker in the office. That doesn't happen. So
no.
Yeah, I see that this podcast is actually, for me, is part of that. Like maybe establishing a connection that is not going to happen if it's not done intentionally. So again, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. I would say our company has always been a virtual company. It didn't change because of the pandemic. I've always worked at home and everybody in our company has. So my interactions with people are via email or occasionally phone calls or things like what we're doing now. Yeah, so it's nice to have a chance to see you kind of quasi in person and chat directly.
The same, likewise. Okay, let's go into this. I'd like to talk also about the job and work part, but let's put that to last. Language, sure. Spanish, which is what brought us here in the first place.
That's
so
true.
Okay, you grew up were in school. Did you study any Spanish as a kid, or did you have around anyone speaking Spanish? What was your connection with the Spanish language as a young child or young student?
Yeah, as I mentioned, we moved around a lot, but most of my time was in Southern California, growing up in grade school. So yeah, there was a lot of Hispanic culture and, you know, Latinos around. Big part of our high school was like that. But because my mom is originally from Belgium and that side of the family speaks French, I took French in high school and then in college, you know, when I went there later. So I didn't ever try to learn Spanish at that time, even though I was surrounded by it.
Yeah. It didn't feel necessary in any way. I mean, your daily living didn't require that.
No, I couldn't say it required it. And it was just something that was around. It's kind of how I grew up. I didn't think about it much. Obviously, I knew that people there were Latino or whatever, and some people spoke Spanish, but it wasn't something I was really involved with at that time. And like I said, I was kind of into learning French and so forth like that, just as kind of a part of my family, you know, side. It was interesting to me to learn that language at the time.
And just to learn, to get a feeling of how things were in that environment about the language, do you recall hearing people speaking Spanish, maybe, I don't know, at school or at store? Was that a common experience?
Oh, yeah. Very regular. Yes.
And what was your feeling about it at the time, if there was any? Like, it's just, well, they speak that and tune it off, didn't pay any attention to it? Or was there any social opinion about it in general? What would you say?
Trying to think back, this is a few years ago now.
Yeah.
But I don't recall any strong opinion about it. It's just something, like I said, it was part of kind of how I grew up and it was around, but I don't remember having any strong opinion about it one way or the other. Just, of course, you know, that if I heard a foreign language, that was mostly what it was. And of course, I didn't understand really a word of it. So of course, I probably, if I was around it and hearing it, I probably thought, gee, I wonder what they're saying, what they're saying must be very interesting. whereas in fact, they could have been talking about the weather, who knows?
Yeah.
It wasn't something that I really gave a lot of thought to at the time. It was just part of the surroundings.
Okay, so you said your or at least your opinion is that your Spanish would be at a level of 6 out of 10. I think that's what you sort of told me. Okay,
roughly,
have you heard?
Yeah.
Oh,
I was going to say, it was probably a little higher when we were actually in Costa Rica. It's been, 8 years now or something. And at least where I am now in Iowa, I don't have hardly any opportunity to really practice. So it's definitely gotten rusty. So I hope you're not going to put me on the spot.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. Not to worry. No, actually, I'm guessing probably people who speak Spanish think your level is higher than you think yourself. That tends to happen, right?
Yeah.
Have they told you that? In the past, when you were back in Costa Rica?
Oh, I mean, sometimes people would maybe be surprised that I could speak with some fluency.
Right.
You'd compliment your Spanish, which is very always good to hear. And at the time, like I said, we'd been there for years. And later, after having the restaurant, this is a longer story, but I mean, I will skip parts of it. But later we went back and had other jobs in Costa Rica and eventually had our own business there. So, you know, we had to deal with banking system and, you know, business permits and all this stuff with the government and things like this. So just being there and having to interact with, you know, regular people and government agencies and banks and things like this, it really forces you in a sense to gain some fluency for your own sake of.
That's an interesting. That's a very, very relevant point in the sense that I was thinking lately that it's very different when you learn a language because you want to learn the language and you go to school or take a course and then the end goal of it is the language. But when you need the language as a tool to get something else, to get by in life, maybe to get food or to get something at a bank, or then the learning is different because you're learning a tool instead of a goal. And I think it's probably easier. Well, I don't know, easier. Maybe, I don't know, you absorb it in a different way. Like your focus is on your goal and then you need this tool and then you use it. So I think that's probably an interesting approach and a way. Well, that's why when you live away surrounded by the language, well, you need to learn because then it's not optional. It's your everyday tool.
Well, yes and no. I will say, first of all, about your point about kind of the difference between wanting to learn it compared to having to learn it. It was, I would say, a combination of both, because honestly, once I got there, almost immediately, I would dove in. I just found it fascinating. I loved learning it. I loved the language. I found it a challenge and interesting. And I guess the biggest, more than an incentive to learn because of business needs or whatever else, it was more about, I discovered quickly, even as I was beginning the process of learning, that the more I could learn, the more I could actually interact in a real way with people, and learn things about them and the society and the culture and so forth that you really can't learn so well if you don't speak the language. Language is integral to the culture. And so it makes a world of difference. I mean, there's a lot of expatriates in Costa Rica from the United States. And I will just say a good percentage of them really don't put any effort into it and feel like everyone else should maybe learn English, even though we're in a Spanish-speaking
country. Do you think maybe what they feel is similar to what you felt as a kid? I mean, like the language is there, but I don't really need to learn. I know it's different because it was the local language for mm-hmm. Costa Rica, not actually the local language in California or the U.S. But I mean, like the surroundings were not forcing you to learn Spanish. I guess, does that happen in Costa Rica too for foreigners?
Absolutely. Yeah, people come there like, I mean, I'll stereotypically say maybe like a retiree, and they show up there and they live amongst a whole lot of other expats. And, many people, of course, in Costa Ricans speak the language because tourism is such a big part of their economy. And they can get by without really hardly speaking any Spanish, and they choose to do that. Which, I I'm not going to make judgment about it. I'm just going to say that for me, learning the language opened up an entire another level of understanding of people and the culture and so forth like this. And I, that's the part I really liked the most, was being able to interact with them, people in their own language, about things that are going on, sports or, government or politics, whatever it was. And I felt you got a much greater depth of understanding and relationship with people by being able to do that.
Yeah, I guess that's what some Roman emperor, I don't recall the name now, said that learning a second language is like having a second soul. So you just described it perfectly.
It's a whole different perspective in many regards of the way, to approach almost everything in life. It's very telling and very fascinating to me.
Okay, so let's get into that journey, because I guess maybe some people listen to this podcast not speaking Spanish and wanting to learn, or maybe they're learning, or they're just in connection with some culture, or it's just fun, or watching a Netflix show and they'd like to listen, watch it in the original language. So, okay, what was the first time you began studying Spanish or learning anything in Spanish, whether studying or just by connection?
I will say I never took any courses. I just learned everything kind of just from interacting with people. And I don't recommend to anybody who's gonna speak Spanish. This is something I did, maybe it only works for me, but I carried around pretty much everywhere I went a Spanish verb book, like 201 verbs of Spanish or something. And I had it all like whatever, there are 15, 16 tenses.
Yeah.
And I would carry it around everywhere with me because I found the conjugation is the most challenging part by far.
Well, you already answered one of my questions, because I have thought many times, like, I feel very happy that I'm a native speaker of Spanish, because I don't know how I would approach learning all those conjugations. I really don't know.
Well, I mean, admittedly, I think you could admit you don't really need all of them on a very regular basis, but there's a good 6 or 8 that you probably should really kind of know on to be able to, speak with some fluency. That having been said, I have a very clear recollection of like my first interactions was when we first showed up at the restaurant I mentioned. It's called the Ira Rosa Cafe.
Can you say the name again?
Oh, Ira Rosa Cafe.
Okay.
It's a local treat where we were living.
Any idea if it still exists?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's still around.
Okay.
And the owner of the building that we were renting a restaurant there, and the owner would come in many mornings, and his English was barely there, and our Spanish was barely there.
Okay.
And like somehow we would communicate enough to kind of, you know, sort of chit chat and talk a little bit. And I remember those first interactions were, they were difficult. And I kept my dictionary out a lot in order to look up words and verbs and things like this. But yeah, that was the first interaction with mostly with Rolando was his name. And very fondly think about us being in the kitchen cooking while he was in there sipping coffee, and we would kind of try and chit chat. And that was the first interactions I recall.
So before moving to Costa Rica, what would you say your level of Spanish was, or was there any?
Oh, no, I call it Taco Bell Spanish. I mean, I knew the name of the menu in Taco Bell, taco, enchilada, burrito, that kind of thing. And that was pretty much it.
How many times you heard people saying, you're doing what? You're moving to where? You're crazy, guys. Because it sounds crazy. It does.
We got a few reactions like that.
If I had to guess, I would have guessed like, well, maybe you had to study Spanish for 1 year or something and you liked it. But none, nothing.
Me, no. Janet, my wife had, I think she took it in college. But let's just say it was basic at best.
So how would you describe the how long was it before you felt like, okay, I'm really getting there with the Spanish?
After I'll let you know when it happens, Jose.
Come on.
No, it really was just the building process over the time, because again, like I don't consider myself fully fluent at this point. So I don't know at what level you say that to yourself, because you know, you start building on things, you start learning more verbs, more vocabulary and sentence structure and so forth like this. Gosh, I guess one thing that occurs to me is I remember when a friend of ours who didn't speak very much Spanish wanted me to help translate between her and a local Spanish speaker. And I guess maybe that's one of the points at which I said, oh, you know, although it's not perfect, I can at least communicate and help this person talk to this person. So maybe that's a good marker.
Yeah, maybe I'd say the point might be the when you're maybe you had a conversation and then maybe a couple of minutes later you can't actually be sure in which language that conversation went on.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you can recall that time, but it means where when your attention is more on the actual information that's being exchanged and the situation rather than on the language. I would say that's a very, very telling frontier there when you get to that point.
I'm sure you're right, and it probably happens sometimes, but when I think back to situations where I was interacting like in an intent, you know, a very concentrated manner with people speaking Spanish for a long time, after, let's say, of doing that for an hour or two, I remember afterward, like my brain felt like it hurt. Just yeah. Because you had to focus so much. Maybe you have a similar experience, in your own, you know, learning.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, yeah, you get a headache. Like your concentration needs to be higher, so it's difficult.
It's not the same just off the cuff. You know, your mind just knows how to say. You have to think about, you know, everything. And that gets better over time. But still, it's different. You know, maybe if I felt like I was 9 or 10 in Spanish, maybe it would flow that naturally like my English does. But I don't feel like I ever got quite to that point.
Well, I don't know. I'll have to talk to someone who spoke to you or speaks to you in Spanish eventually. But I won't put you in that situation now. Okay, so how did it, when by the time when you arrived, then you, of course, you had to manage yourself in Spanish. Would you say clients were Spanish speakers or were foreigners?
No, where we live, Monteverde, is the little community where we were. It's up in the mountains of Costa Rica, and it's known for the cloud forest reserve there. It's very famous biological reserve, and a very heavily touristic area. So we had a lot of American tourists as well as Europeans, Israelis and so forth, but pretty much everybody who came in spoke English in terms of our clients or our guests in the restaurant. Yeah. It was more dealing with, you know, vegetable vendors and things like this, banking and stuff like this. Post office and so forth, where, you know, mostly would speak Spanish in those situations. So it wasn't a lot so much the clients, it's just more the, I'll say, locals, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. And okay, so conjugations, probably one of the most difficult things in Spanish, or not difficult maybe to get by, but to begin to really use them relatively properly. That probably takes a while and a lot of work. And just so you know, native Spanish speakers, we don't do it properly either. So there are so many variations. And also there's something interesting that I don't know if you know, but we can go into another area of speaking about the Spanish language. And it is that some constructions mean different things in different places. The same construction. Hmm. Like, for example, the present perfect, is it? Yes. I have been to whatever place. Mm-hmm. Means something different in Spain compared to Latin America. Really? And I'm not sure, but I'm researching, I'm talking to people about that, if there is also a difference in variation, but it's very subtle. I can tell you what it is in a second. But I'm trying to find out, okay, then if this is different, because I only discovered it after living in Spain for a few years. So if this is different in from Spain to Latin America, or at least Venezuela, or what we could consider neutral Latin America. That kind of a Spanish, which is used in media. Yeah, I don't know, maybe you heard the episode about it. It's something mm-hmm. neutral Latin American Spanish doesn't really exist. It had to be right. made up in a right. way, mixing things. But we can talk about it if you want, or just there is an episode of the Spanish We Do podcast when we talk specifically about that. And I'm going to do an update because I'm going to talk to some people from networks that broadcast to the whole Latin American region and okay. see what they're doing mm-hmm. right now. But the thing is, in Spain, when you say yo he comido, I have eaten, mm-hmm. yep. means it was very recent, like a couple of hours ago. Mm-hmm. But if you say the simple past, like yo comí in mm-hmm. Spain, is like, okay, I did it maybe yesterday, a week ago.
Okay.
That's how it is felt here in most part of Spain, but not all of them. There's a reason for that. And but for us in Latin America, we don't normally use that present perfect. It's odd thing. It actually sounds from Spain. But for us, it doesn't sound like it happened recently. It sounds like it, okay, I've done it throughout my life. Like the yo he comido, I have mm-hmm. eaten. It sounds like you're talking about a very long period of time. Like, I mm-hmm. know, I have eaten apples all of my life. Yeah. That's how it sounds like, a very long period of time. But for Spain, it sounds like it just happened like half an hour ago. And it was just a one-time thing.
Well, so how would you say I've eaten apples all my life in Spain?
You would have to do the whole expression.
Oh.
But if you say, yo he comido manzanas, I have eaten apples, then Latin America, you say, well, of course, we all have throughout all of our lives. Sometimes we have eaten an apple. But in Spain, you would understand that they just did it. So it's a very subtle difference. And but in this region of Spain where I'm living, which is Galicia, they speak like the local language is Galician, which is the mother language of Portuguese. It's an older language than Portuguese. And Galician does not have that composed past or present tense. They only have the simple form. So Galicians use it differently, even when they speak Spanish. But I know it sounds complicated maybe to someone who's learning Spanish, but those are very subtle differences that you only notice when you've been a while in the place and maybe pay attention. Because if I had not, I don't know how I came to that realization, but I may just have lived here for several years and never noticed it. And I know there are more of those I'm not aware of. I'm for sure. Sure. So it's a very interesting thing. So, okay, my question is, I don't know, right now, you have experience with Spanish, you were for 16 years in Costa Rica speaking Spanish, you sort of work with it in a way currently, mm-hmm. right? Yep. So what's your view of the Spanish language throughout the world in this sense? If someone asked you, someone who does not speak Spanish at all, they want your expertise. How many types of Spanish do you feel exist? What's your feeling about it? How would you classify that?
As far as my work's concerned, I would probably lump it into two groups. One being what you mentioned, the neutral Latin American Spanish, and then Spanish from Spain.
Yeah.
That, you know, because when I worked with you, I remember, and with other narrators as well, doing Spanish narration, we would say we would like neutral Spanish because most of the people that we work with or who would hear our training videos are more from the Americas.
Yes.
From Latin America, who are living here, who maybe Spanish is their first language, but we wanted something that they, you know, be more comfortable and understandable and make sense to them. So we want neutral Latin American Spanish. But I mean, even from my experience living there and listening to your podcast, I know that there is no real thing called neutral Latin American Spanish.
Well, it's because Spanish, no one really speaks Chilean it Spanish. In the street.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, of course. But you know, if you're trying to reach a multinational Spanish language audience, I guess that's the best approach, is kind of a neutral one that pretty much everyone can understand. We're working on a project at the McCallum Group right now with a client, and we're putting together an international website, which is going to include English, French, I think Italian, and Spanish.
Yeah.
But that's for a European market. So when we're doing that, we're going to hopefully find people with more of a Spanish accent, because that's the clientele that's going to be made for.
Well, just so you know, I do both.
I've heard that.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised. You know, I've done it for several years, at least for 15 years now. And you know what? I'm relating sort of to your feeling about speaking Spanish, but this is within Spanish. Let me explain. I was born in Venezuela, raised in Venezuela, and all my father's family was from Spain, from this part, Galicia, and my mother's side, all from Venezuela. So the pronunciation here in Spain is not foreign to me. I was used to hearing it all the time, and I could do it. But what I was not sure is, would a native, a local from Spain, feel bad about it? Feel like I was mocking it, or would it? Could it pass by local? So doing freelance work, one day I said, "Well, I'm gonna try it." So I went ahead and did it. It's still, to me, I was not sure about it, but hey, the client paid me for it, and they kept coming back, and now. I can say, well, happily, this is exactly the time when I got like more secure about it, like feeling better about it. I got a client from Israel who wanted to, they do something related to insurance. I think they do some kind of app to manage their social presence in social media for insurance companies and their agents and that kind of thing. So they have a professional presence and on all of that. So they wanted to reach both the Latin American market as a whole, which is a possible approach, thanks to media. And the ones who began doing this were actually the people from HBO. Which is part, that's also in the episode if anyone wants to check it out. But then they wanted Spain as well, and they came to me for Latin America, but somehow they told me, "We want Spain." It's a, well, I can do it. Are you sure? Well, yes, I'm perfectly fine with the terminology, the vocabulary, and I can do the recording as well. Then I had that little doubt still in the back of my head. But their local agent just reviewed everything and never said anything. So, and they came back a couple of times. So I feel okay about it now. All right. So I think you were correct. Like Spain in Latin America. Do you have a sense of Spanish being spoken differently in the south of Latin America? Is that anywhere in your mind? Possible or an idea?
I'm sorry, what do you mean by the south of what?
Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay.
It's definitely different. I mean, going back to Monteverde, Costa Rica, where we lived, there were a lot of American expats, but there were also a lot of people from, we had friends from Argentina and Venezuela and different places. And there's definitely a difference. You can, you know, obviously it's not as easy to pick up when you don't speak any Spanish, but once you start to learn the language, you start to notice the differences. Just in accent and word choice and things of this nature. So it means different from Costa Rica to Nicaragua, which is right next door. I could definitely tell a difference there. It's distinct country to country, and probably even regionally within countries. And Costa Rica is a small country, mind you.
Yeah, I think it's like 5 million people currently, I think.
Yes.
Just about that.
Just about that, yeah.
So, yeah.
So,
Yeah, of course.
They have the,
And
the whole Pacific side, the Caribbean side is much more Caribbean flavored. It's different, you know?
yeah, I don't know. You got more of a vantage point, I'd say, because of your experience, evidently, compared to someone who has not lived in a Spanish-speaking country and doesn't speak the language. But I think that the tendency, and this is very, I think it's very normal, is to, when you don't know much about the language, maybe, as you said, lump people into one whole group and not really being aware of the differences or what differences there might be. So I think that's part of the interesting thing. So maybe when you hear a new type or a new genre of music, it all sounds the same. So that, something like that, I guess.
I was thought of something when you were speaking a moment ago about speaking Spanish, Spanish. I don't know how else to say that.
Well,
Spanish
that's
in
another
Spain.
interesting point, you know, because they're calling it Castilian. I've heard that. And that creates many potential confusions. I can tell you about it later if you want.
Oh, I just remember when we had the Iturriza Cafe there for what been there for a little while. My Spanish was definitely very basic still, but I was beginning to pick up some abilities. And I was standing on the porch of the restaurant with the owner, Rolando, I mentioned, and this tourist from Spain was there, and he was eating, him and his family were eating in the restaurant, and ended up with me and Rolando and this Spanish tourist standing chatting in Spanish in on the porch. And because my Spanish was very basic, I couldn't barely understand anything he said at all. And so he was talking, and then Rolando would speak to me in the Costa Rican Spanish so I could understand what the Spanish guy was saying. And it just really stuck with me that the distinction. It's such a marked difference in the accent and so forth, and I guess sentence structure maybe. So it's kind of stuck with me.
And there are, it's like, I don't know, that this is another thing to explore. That I have written some down somewhere down in a list, but it seems like countries where the languages are from, like the original, let's say original, even though there's nothing original, it's all evolving and changing all the time. But it happens with the Spanish, it happens with Portuguese, it happens with English. It seems like places where, let's say, the oldest places where language was or is spoken have kind of like darker, more noisy accents. That's the feeling I've got,
Interesting.
and it really caught my attention that it's happened with at least with those three languages. I know, like I wonder now about French and others. So I don't know,
I
but
know.
Spanish from Latin America, and maybe you got that feeling. Maybe you can confirm that after the experience you told me about. It's like lighter and potentially clearer, I think, in many situations, potentially.
To me, it is. I guess I don't know if it's actually inherent in the language difference from Latin America to Spain, or if it's just because I was, that's what the style of Spanish that I learned, therefore I understood it more easily. So I'm not sure which one it is, but maybe a bit of both. I'm not sure. To your point about the language, difference within languages, I will tell you that like sometimes we'll watch a Irish movie, which is, supposedly in English. We have to put on the subtitles sometimes because it's such a distinct, accent can be very strong. And they talk different and say things differently. And sometimes we can't understand very much of what they're saying. And even in ostensibly, it's in English.
Absolutely. And yes, well, one thing that's interesting about Spanish in that sense is because, well, I couldn't tell you like a reason for sure, but doing some research and talking to people, I get the sense. And maybe if you heard that the episode about the HBO and how things evolve with neutral Latin American Spanish, but because of media, because we all countries or most the bigger countries that produce audiovisual material in Latin America, like Mexico, Argentina, Venezuela at one point, Colombia as well, they all shared shows, TV shows, sometimes telenovelas, but other kind of things also. So is I don't think in most situations anyone would have a problem understanding anyone else from another country who speaks Spanish. Maybe in vocabulary, some word could come up and it could end up being a funny situation or maybe an embarrassing situation. Or but that strong difference, except maybe with Spain, as you mentioned, because sometimes the accent tends to be quite thick and they speak in a very like a lower, the pronunciation is quite lower and a bit more noisy. And but I don't think there would be a problem. So that's why neutral Latin American Spanish is such a useful tool in that sense.
Yeah, imagine.
Okay, let's leave it there. Alto, alto. todo el mundo. Stop, everyone. This is the end of episode one, but there are two more parts to this conversation. In the next one, we'll talk a little bit more about the language itself, Spanish itself, what kind of reaction Michael gets in the US when people find out he speaks Spanish. Is it? I don't know if it's going to be what you have in your head. Maybe not. His advice about learning Spanish, my own experiences, well, a little bit, at least one episode, one anecdote about learning English for me. Funny, now, not then. The experience of his family moving back to the US after 16 years and with a daughter born in Costa Rica and now getting into the American culture. And you won't want to miss what he says when I ask him, do you miss Costa Rica? What do you miss about Costa Rica? Tell me about it. Just that is worth the wait. Adios, adios. See you on the next episode of Spanish We Do. Sí, sí.